Merkel Media.
Lashback Fridays here on Macroaggressions, taking you back to March 9th, 2021. Hang the DJ. Hey, if you're thinking of converting some of your soon-to-be worthless Federal Reserve notes into tangible assets like gold and silver, maybe even your IRA and 401k as well, talk to our sponsor, Tony Arterburn, over at Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. Just go to www.macroaggressions.gold. Now, please enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a Swangled in Fort
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. Thank you so much for listening to us. We know you've got a ton of options out there. I'm very flattered and humbled by it. If you like the show, please take the additional step of sharing it. It's the only way the show's going to get out there. The algorithms hate us. That's established. We know that they're trying to shadow ban content like this. And so I can't rely on the traditional methods. I'm going to need you guys to do your part, if you don't mind, and get the word out. Thank you, of course, as always, to our amazing sponsors. Honey Colony has been great to us. Miriam Hanane, founder of Honey Colony, director of Vanishing of the Bees, writer for RT, phenomenal person, small business owner, guest of the show. We love her. Use the promo code MACRO when you go to honeycolony.com to save yourself some money. Same with Chemical Free Body. We have Tim James, our good friend. He runs that company too. He is out there searching for the truth when he's not making amazing supplement products for you. Get yourself healthy. Take the additional step. Take a look at these websites, honeycolony.com, chemicalfreebody.com. In both cases, promo code MACRO. Easy. And I also have in the podcast description a link to Coinbit Apps, which is my friend Hotep Jesus's company that takes your transactions, your banking transactions, credit card transactions, rounds up. Instead of rounding up for charity and giving it away, you round up and it buys Bitcoin for you. There's going to be a link in the description. If you click through there, then our show gets $5 in Bitcoin. We'll take it, you know. But I really, more than anything, I want people to have options for that. I want you to work with people that we know, people that are friends of the show, people that have their own businesses. We got to support each other. That's really what it comes down to. So I appreciate you guys doing that. Let's get into the show. The show's going to be a bit dark. Not going to lie to you. It's about Jimmy Savile. And if you know a little bit about Jimmy Savile after this episode, you're going to know a lot. And unfortunately, it's not going to be good. There wasn't a whole lot of good that this guy was doing. Yeah, he gave the impression that he was out there saving the world and you know, he was a big charity guy. He did a lot of marathons. He ran constantly. He would run for certain fundraisers and things like that. He would run for the children. He would run to the children too as well. But if you know a little bit about who he is, if you don't know a little bit about who he is, let me rephrase that. What you need to do is you need to look him up online and get a picture of what he of his face. You have to visually see what this guy looks like. Jimmy Savile, S-A-V-I-L-E. And what you will see is that he is the personification of evil. I don't have to tell you anything about him. You take one look at this guy and you get the creeps. You know, it's interesting. There's a lot of them like that. You know, there are a lot of guys that just have that look to them. You can't quite put your finger on it. There's nothing really scientific about it, but you just look at him and you go, whoa. Like if that guy walked by you, and your kids were with it, you'd grab your kids a little tighter. You know what I mean? Not a big guy, not a physically intimidating guy, but a devious, evil looking guy who dressed up. You know, he was a bit buffoonish. He was, so let's get into a little bit about who he was and what he was. So for people in the United States, let's make a comparison that'll make it a little bit easier for you. Think of Dick Clark. Okay. A guy that was on your television set forever. He was heavily involved as a radio DJ. Dick Clark was, and then he had his own show, Dick Clark's Top 40. Well, guess what? Jimmy Savile had his own radio show as well. He worked at the BBC for decades, 40 years, 50 years, actually. His show, Top of the Pops, was like American Bandstand that Dick Clark was doing. It was very similar to it. And they would have bands come on and play, and then everyone was dancing. It was like Soul Train or American Bandstand for the UK. And from that, an additional show came out called Jim'll Fix It. And this is where sweet Jimmy Savile reads all these letters that he gets from kids, and kids write in. They say, oh, Jimmy, I've got a problem in my home life, or I've got a problem in my school, and this person's doing this X, Y, or Z. And Jim will fix it. He'll come to the rescue. He'll take care of the problem. He'll give the, you know, he'll rub the kid's head and say, go get him, Tiger, and do all that good stuff, right? Because he's a nice guy. That's the image that he wants to portray. Well, there was more to what Jimmy Savile was doing than just being a radio DJ, and more than just being a television host of Jim'll Fix It. He was also a world-class pedophile of the highest order. Now, he's dead, and he died about a decade ago, but what he did was reprehensible, really. The earliest known cases of Jimmy Savile abuse came from Leeds, which is the city where he grew up. And in 1962, when Jimmy Savile was 36 years old, that was the first known case of him abusing somebody. Now, it's not to say that it wasn't happening well before that. In fact, I would assume that it was. Abusers tend to be abused early on, and sometimes when they grow up, they repeat this. So he was 36 when the first known case of abuse happened. He was 82 when the last known case happened. That was 2009. These maniacs always tend to live long lives too. But he also had, you know, he was a sexual predator. He was a sexual deviant too. I mean, I think it goes without saying when you're like molesting kids that you're a sexual predator and a sexual deviant. But I say that because Jimmy Savile took those things to new heights. When I say sexual deviant, he was a necrophiliac. You know what that is? That's somebody who has sex with dead bodies. This is not rumor or speculation. This was discovered to be 100% true. So just in case you were wondering what level of psychopathic, predator, pedophile maniac this guy is, he's the type that's also into having sex with dead bodies. So let's put him at the on the top shelf of these people. He was a knight of Malta. He was a knight of the realm. And he was a knight commander of St. Gregory. God, the fucking UK, man. They love their knighthoods. They love all that stuff. Sir Jimmy Savile. Yeah, he was Sir Jimmy Savile. He was thought to be a spy for the British. He was close friends with Ian Fleming, the creator of James Bond, of the books and movies, and who was a spy. Jimmy Savile was a spy. He wasn't just thought to be one. He was in the information business. You know, that's who Jimmy Savile was. He knew everybody at the highest levels of government and society in the UK in the 70s, 80s, 90s, maybe even 2000s. But really in that 60s, 70s, and 80s when he was coming out, he was a big figure. He was well-connected. And the reason why he was so well-connected was because he was friends with the royal family. And not just casual acquaintances. He was really good friends with them. How good friends, you might ask? Well, we'll get into that in a little bit. So he was born on Halloween as the seventh son in his family. He was born in Leeds. That reminds me of an Iron Maiden album, Seventh Son of a Seventh Son. And there's something to this. There's a darkness to Jimmy Savile that went beyond the visible realm. There was an energetic darkness about this guy. He was into some things that were unspeakable. The connections that he had were very real. And you can tell how real they were by the fact that this guy never spent a day of his life in jail for what he had done. And what he had done was well known, well documented, and extremely evil. You see, what Jimmy Savile was, besides a BBC presenter, radio DJ extraordinaire, host of Jim Will Fix It, celebrity, philanthropist, which I'm sure he meant full-on rapist. See, what he really was, all those things were cover. BBC, great. Make a little money doing that. Yeah, yeah. Jim Will Fix It, great. In the public eye for 50 years, gives you the protection, you know, the protection of being famous, being known. That's Jimmy Savile. He couldn't have done anything bad to you. Do you know who he is? He's a well-respected DJ. He's been with BBC here for going on half a century. He would never have done that. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You see, what Jimmy Savile was he was a procurer of children for the rich and powerful. That's what he did. That's why he was untouchable. Because the people that he was getting kids for were the most powerful people in the country, maybe even in the world. Some of them were the most powerful people in the world. And when you are the conduit to get these powerful people the things that they need, i.e. children for whatever purposes, usually sexual, sometimes darker than that. If you want to go down that adrenochrome path, you're welcome to with Jimmy Savile. If you want to go down the ritual sacrifice, he'll take you there as well. Snuff films, he was involved in them. I'm sorry. I know it's dark. But this is who the guy was. He was a procurer of children for the royal family as well. He was introduced to the royal family through his relationship with Lord Mountbatten. Lord Mountbatten was a known pedophile, undisputed. It was not a secret. And Mountbatten is Prince Charles' uncle, a person very involved with his life, more so than his father, to be fair. Lord Mountbatten, Prince Charles' uncle, was a father figure in his life. And Lord Mountbatten was brought in, was the guy who brought Jimmy Savile into the royal family. So we know about what's going on with the royals. We understand about Prince Andrew. You think this is not a one-off situation with them? It's a culture. It's a family of pedophilia. It is the tie that binds them all together. Not just the royals, really, but the upper echelon of society. That Eyes Wide Shut level of society. By the way, that movie filmed at the Rothschild Mansion outside of London. At least the costume scene, the most famous scene, you know. Jimmy Savile was brought in for a very specific reason. He could be the person outside of the family who is in charge of procuring the children for the family, for them to use and do whatever they want with. You don't become a Knight of Malta, a Knight of the Realm, and a Knight Commander of St. Gregory unless you are in the club. You know the big club that George Carlin talks about that we ain't in? Jimmy Savile was in the club. Everybody knew who he was. Everybody knew what he did. He was friends with the Beatles. He was friends with the Pope. He was friends with Elvis Presley. He was great friends with Margaret Thatcher. He was best friends with Ted Heath. He knew Tony Blair really well. He was one of Gary Glitter's biggest fans and Cliff Richard's as well. Also had very tight relationship with former Prime Minister David Cameron, Lord McAlpine, and others. It's interesting with that list I read off. A lot of pedophiles on that list. The Pope, the Royals, Margaret Thatcher, Ted Heath, Lord Mountbatten, Tony Blair, Gary Glitter, Cliff Richards, Lord McAlpine, and I'm not sure about David Cameron, and I'm not sure about the Beatles, and I'm not sure about Elvis, but the rest I'm sure. He used to carry a cigar with him everywhere he went. You know, he'd have it in his mouth. He would kind of chew on it. It wasn't lit. He's just chewing on it. Yeah. He was, I mean, look, this is going to sound like a kind of a throwaway comment, but he was a weird guy. I think it kind of goes without saying, but watch the video, watch the interviews of him talking when he's not being a pedophile, when he's trying to be a normal, decent human being, like after these charity, marathons and runs that he would do for all of them. Watch him get interviewed. Watch the way he talks to people and watch his mannerisms. He was a weird guy. The reason why he was weird was because he was extremely involved in the occult, deeply involved in it. And he carried the cigar around. He'd have it in his mouth everywhere. But the people that knew who he was, they looked at that cigar as more of a wand. No kidding. Than a cigar. It took the place of his magic wand. You see, Jimmy Savile was a wizard. He was known to be a wizard. Now, for us normies, you know, for us that aren't into that stuff, you know, we laugh. We go, oh, really? Like the Wizard of Oz wizard? Like, no. He was a wizard. He was in charge of this shit. These occult practices. He wasn't just the DJ. He wasn't just the MC. He wasn't just, you know, the presenter at BBC. He was running these dark occult rituals as well, which is yet another reason why he was untouchable. I mean, I know that sounds like speculation that he was a wizard, but I'd like to ask a question. When he died and was buried, why do you think he was buried at a 45-degree angle? Doesn't that seem a little unusual to you? Well, it has to do with his, let's just call them religious beliefs. Now, Jimmy Savile didn't just work at the BBC. He was an international celebrity. Like I said, he knew the Pope. He was friends with these guys, not just the musicians, not just the actors. The royals, the politicians, and the bankers. He was, the Beatles referred to him as King Solomon. Okay. The Beatles considered Jimmy Savile to be King Solomon. Now, I don't really know what to make of that, except that something tells me they probably knew something that we don't know, that they had a reason to refer to him as King Solomon. I don't know. I found that to be interesting. But what he really enjoyed doing when he wasn't doing any of this stuff, when he wasn't, you know, running the marathon, charity marathons, or having the fundraisers, or filming his shows, or doing his radio show, what he really loved doing was charity work. Yeah, of all things. The guy was a huge philanthropist. Full-on rapist. He loved to work at hospitals, you know, because he has a good heart and he's a giver. Well, he was giving people something in those hospitals, that's for sure. He was given the position of house doctor at Stoke Mandeville, where he worked with spinal injury patients, and also at Broadmoor, which was another hospital, where he worked with the criminally insane, appropriate, and had a set of keys to the place for over 50 years. He had, this is going to blow your mind, he had a small apartment on the grounds of both of these hospitals, Stoke Mandeville and Broadmoor. I mean, can we talk about that for a second? Can we speculate about who has a studio apartment at a hospital, let alone two, and why? Okay, great. Yeah, Jimmy, thanks. You come in, you make the rounds, you cheer up the patients and everything. Now, but you're going to stay here? Or what are you going to do tomorrow? He also worked as a psychotherapist with troubled girls at Duncroft Hospital. Because, you know, let's let that guy mess with your brain a little bit, right? But basically, okay, this is what it is. Jimmy Savile sought out broken people. Basically, that's the core of this. He physically broken in terms of the spinal cord units, emotionally broken in terms of Broadmoor, maybe even traditionally broken at Duncroft Hospital. But more than anything, he sought out troubled or damaged people, which is reprehensible, obviously. It's dark and weird and all of those things. But he was doing this not for 5 weeks or 5 months or 5 years, but 50 years. I'm not even 50. So it'd be like me doing it for my entire life plus a couple of years. Just to sort of put it in perspective for me. To have an apartment on the grounds of a hospital so that you can do God knows what to these people. Like, Jesus, they haven't had it bad enough. They're already in a hospital. Some of them are mentally insane. Some of them are paralyzed. And then you turn Jimmy Savile loose on them on top of that? Holy shit. I mean, I bet he's not covered by your insurance. But you want to know what's interesting about this? I mean, on a sort of a spiritual level. All three of these hospitals and the headquarter of the BBC, British Broadcasting Company, were located on powerful ley lines that run across the country. Now, I'm not going to pretend to know the ins and outs of ley lines, okay? What I do know about them is this. They're very real. It's not a physical line. It's an energetic line, a magnetic line. They're very real. And apparently they matter to people that are in the know. People that understand this see value in being close to the ley line, being on the ley line itself, because there is a perception, or maybe even it's true. I'm not in a position to verify this, but that being on those ley lines, you are in the proximity to more energy. Energy flows through these ley lines. And for whatever reason, these people like to be close to that energy, to harness it, I would imagine. So one of the things that he did that came out after he was dead was that he used to perform satanic rituals in the basement of Stoke Mandeville Hospital, where he would harness the energy of the insane and he would harness the energy of the ley lines for his magic rituals. So this wasn't like a random incident. This was well thought out. This was beyond well thought out. Now, he could have volunteered at a variety of hospitals, and he did. But he specifically liked these hospitals the best. And the reason has to do with the ley lines, the energetic component of this. It mattered to him. It was something that he sought out. He also worked with the Leeds Infirmary as well. So he was from Leeds. He worked with people there at that hospital, always had a place there, was based there. But he, you know, of course, he had another place in London. And he was known as the guy that you could bring into your hospital to come in and cheer up all the sick kids. Yes, he might rape a couple of them when he was done, but that's a small price to pay for having the rest of the kids very happy for at least an afternoon. Obviously, I'm being facetious there. But so some of the hospitals where he abused children are, like I just mentioned, Leeds General Infirmary, Great Ormond Street, Exeter Hospital, Saxondale Mental Health Hospital in Nottinghamshire, and Wheatfield Hospice in Leeds. And as an additional one, Sue Ryder Hospice for Dying Children. I tell you, you have to be a real piece of shit to sexually abuse dying children in a hospice. I mean, that is at the top of the list for awful things to do. And of course, the Great Ormond Street Hospital that I mentioned in there is a children's hospital in London. You know, you go where the hunting's good, right? If you're a serial sexual predator, that's where you go. He targeted people at hospitals for over 30 years, starting in 1965. Now, there's a report called Giving Victims a Voice. And according to that report, 450 victims have come forward to allege incidents. And Saville is said to have committed 214 criminal offenses in 28 areas of England and Wales. Okay. So this is, you want to hear the count? This is what we've got. They've got him pegged at in, by some accounts. It's going to vary. So we're going to change the numbers here a little bit more. So he most definitely was accused of raping 34 people, including 28 children. And he used, you know, he just used every opportunity and every institution to which he had access because of his fame to target kids. 57 of the allegations took place in 14 different hospitals and a hospice in the UK. He assaulted 16 victims at Leeds General Infirmary, one at Great Ormond Street Hospital, and he even assaulted someone who was visiting a dying child at the Sue Wider Wheatfield Hospice in Leeds. You know that kid that he, the one kid that he abused at Great Ormond Street Hospital, that kid died. And we know that because a witness came forward and said so. He assaulted children and young girls 33 different times in TV and radio studios. Yes, I know that number, 33. And there were 14 assaults in schools. He was invited into the schools, which have not been named, by children who wanted to appear on Jim'll Fix It. So he'd come to the schools because the kids wanted him there because of Jim'll Fix It. And he assaulted 14 different people during those trips. This guy was out of control with no worry about any sort of repercussions. He had the money to pay him off. He had the police in his pocket. He had the royal family looking out for him. He was untouchable. Plus, he was famous. And let's not discount that. That matters. How dare you say something negative about that man? Don't you know he runs for charity? Haven't you seen all the great work he's done with the children's hospitals around the country? And you're going to accuse him of touching you? How dare you? This is a national treasure. Says so on the BBC. That's how it works. Nobody's going to believe you. That's what he'd tell him. He told the Surrey police in 2009 that sexual assault complaints against him were invented and an occupational hazard for a famous entertainer. I mean, four women came forward in 2007 and 2008 talking about past abuse. They took it straight to the police, and the police just said, brought him in, and he said, these are invented. This is what happens when you're a famous person. Sometimes people come after you. And guess what? They did nothing. And then the few cases where they did something about it, guess what? Their bosses did nothing. Do you know why? Because that's how it works. You don't get to become the police chief or the head, whatever the equivalent is in the UK, without being controllable. When the Jimmy Savile file comes across your desk, you know what to do with it. And if you don't know what to do with it, you will be told what to do with it. And that is to look the other way. The number of people that reported abuse or inappropriate encounters by Savile just at Leeds General Infirmary was 60 different people. And the age ranges were from 5 to 75. It's disgusting. He assaulted 33, here's that number again, patients, 19 children, 14 adults. 19 of the 33 victims that he assaulted in this hospital, of the 33 victims, 19 of them were staff. He was diddling the kids and the staff. 9 people reported it. 4 children, 5 adults. Nothing happened. 9. That's just at that hospital. At Broadmoor, 11 people came forward. It's a high security mental health hospital. And yet 11 different people had situations with Jimmy Savile. 6 patients, 2 staff, 3 minors. Lest you think for a second that Leeds General Infirmary and Broadmoor were the only two hospitals reporting this, I will have you know that an additional 31 hospitals reported Jimmy Savile. Okay? This guy was out of control. But nothing happened. Nothing happened because he worked for the BBC. He was their guy. And of course, it shouldn't come as any surprise that in 2011, the BBC shelved a report that claimed Savile was, they'd made a report for the TV program Newsnight that was all about Savile. Guess what the BBC did with it? They tanked it. Oh God, where have I heard that before? Oh yeah, ABC with the Epstein event and Amy Rohrbach. Remember that? I had the goods 4 years ago and they sat on it or whatever. Savile, look, he wasn't just doing this to kids in hospitals, which is on a, you know, at the top of the scale in terms of reprehensible behavior. He was also doing this in the BBC, at the office. And that closed culture, you know, of the 1970s and 1980s made it really difficult for the staff to complain about it. He committed so many acts of inappropriate sexual conduct at the BBC that it became just known. It was, oh, that's Jimmy being Jimmy. This started in 1965 and at the BBC and went to 2006. So 41 years, he sexually assaulted a teenage girl at the final recording of Top of the Pops. Most of those victims that he was working with there, you know, that he was assaulting there, were between 13 and 16 years old. You know, that guy, you know, I said that the BBC shelved that film on Jimmy Savile, on his sex crimes. It was the Newsnight editor, Peter Rippon, who did that. But he's going to become the editor of the BBC's online archive. Isn't that convenient? Nobody gets fired. Nobody pays a price for this. A report came out that said, in summary, my conclusion is that certain junior and middle ranking individuals were aware of Saville's inappropriate sexual conduct in connection with his work for the BBC. However, I found no evidence that the BBC, as a corporate body, was aware of Saville's inappropriate sexual conduct in connection with his work for the BBC. That's a lie. That's 100% a lie. And they know it. So the royal connection to this is pretty important. Prince Charles' friendship with Jimmy Savile started in the 1970s while they were working with children's wheelchair sports charities. They certainly do like those children's charities, don't they? So, you know, these children's charities, by the way, I just have to say, they're a hunting ground. You know, they're used as cover for some devious stuff. Jimmy Savile obviously included in this. He would use these children's charities as an opportunity to find kids to abuse. And look, I mentioned he had places in the hospitals. He had little apartments in the hospitals. He had places in the children's homes too. So he could be closer to the victims. And see, the people that are running these care homes, what you have to understand is that before you go, that's crazy, why would anyone let Jimmy Savile in here to, you know, sleep next to the kids or anything? You have to understand who's running these care homes. Pedophiles are running them. They know who Jimmy Savile is. This isn't some mistake. They didn't get duped. They're part of this. I mean, there's plenty of stories about that. You remember Jerry, I mean, you've heard of Jerry Sandusky, who used to be the defensive coordinator for Penn State football team. And he had his charity called the Second Mile. What was it? It was a children's charity. What was he doing? He was trafficking kids. This is part of what happens in these, for people in positions of power. Start a charity. It provides amazing cover. You can accuse the guy that started a children's charity of being a pedophile molester. You better have your evidence. You better have airtight evidence, right? Or else you're never going to go anywhere. Well, where's Jerry Sandusky right now? His dance card is filled every single night in prison. He is in prison for the rest of his life, where he belongs. God willing, he's being raped right now, or braiding hair, or both, hopefully. I don't know. I guarantee you Jerry Sandusky's wearing his boxers backwards, if you know what I mean. He is open for business. But that's what you get, man, when you're a pedophile like that. When you're a known, notorious, horrible human being like that, and you get caught, and you don't have a get-out-of-jail-free card like Jimmy Savile has, well, guess what? They send you away forever from time to time. But see, what's crazy about the relationship that Savile had with the royals, and this is so insane, but I've talked to Sean Atwood about this too in the UK, and that is that when Prince Charles and Diana were going through like a rough part in the late 80s, the marriage counselor that was brought in to help sort of bridge this gap that was developing in their relationship was Jimmy Savile. I mean, I suppose Adolf Hitler wasn't available, so they went with Jimmy Savile or Stalin or whatever. Oh, how fucked is your marriage when Jimmy Savile has to come in and fix it? Do you imagine? Like, we've got the, your marriage counselor's come in and he's like, and that guy walks in with his cigar and all his rings and his jewelry and his red sunglasses and his scary hair and his teeth that he never brushed and his little kids hanging off his belt loop and everything. You know, I mean, oh, great. Jimmy's going to fix it. Jimmy's going to fix our marriage. Listen, if Jimmy Savile is your last hope for fixing your marriage, you better get yourself a divorce attorney like right away. Yeah, but listen, he did such a good job that they brought him in to help with the Duchess of York, Sarah Ferguson, as well. Some private marriage affairs. And guess, you know, Sarah Ferguson also didn't she also start a children's charity in the UK with another guy who's a pedophile? Oh yeah, I mean, what are the chances? And for the record, Sarah Ferguson, the Duchess of York, was married to Prince Andrew. And they're not married anymore, but that, in case you're unfamiliar with your royalty, British royalty, That's what's up. So we've got Saville, a notorious pedophile linked to a ton of individuals in the royal family. Okay. We've got Prince Philip, the guy who hopes that when he dies, he comes back as a deadly virus so he can wipe out the population. Yeah. That was his buddy. You've got Lord Mountbatten. You've got Prince Charles. You've got Prince Andrew. Do you think you are starting to understand why Prince Harry might have decided to leave? This is not a healthy home life. There is some dark shit going on there. You know, Jimmy Savile said one time, "The thing about me is I get things done and I work deep cover." It's comments like that that made people think that he was a spy. He was a spy. Yeah. So anyway, Charles has a long relationship with Jimmy. Jimmy Savile would have dinners and invite Prince Charles over and have young girls there and things like that. There's an incident in Glencoe, Scotland in 1999 where Savile arranged for three women to parade around in these little short dresses, you know, for Prince Charles. And Prince Charles, being the, you know, polite royal that he is, sent a very nice Christmas card to Jimmy Savile with a note that said, "Jimmy, with affectionate greetings from Charles, give my love to your ladies in Scotland." And look, some people have even speculated that Princess Diana sealed her own fate after threatening to reveal networks of pedophilia within the royal family. You know, she did talk about dark forces and members of an organization that were monitoring her shortly before her death. So she knew something was coming. She knew it. She was very vocal about that. And of course, the great work of David Icke, who has, he's been talking about this global cabal of pedophiles and for decades. He's even named him by name. Here's a quote from David Icke. "This man," meaning Jimmy Savile, "was an aging, sleazy disc jockey, right? And he had complete access to the British royal family, and they used him as an official go-between with Prince Charles and Diana when they were falling out in their marriage. And now it's come out this week that he was advising Prince Charles on aids to employ. Why is this man so close, or was so close, to the British royal family? The answer to that will bring the British royal family down." You know, Savile considered himself to be a devout Catholic. He was also a pathological liar and a pedophile, so I don't know if you would necessarily believe him if he described himself as a devout Catholic, but he was made a knight commander of St. Gregory by Pope John Paul II back in 1990 for his charity work. That honor is awarded to Catholics, on occasion non-Catholics, but mostly Catholics, who have demonstrated preeminent service to their faith, community, or the work of the Vatican. Do we need to go into the Vatican? I mean, do we need to go into what they're up to? When the Vatican is publicly announcing that they think that you have done an outstanding job in service to them, that is not a compliment. That is an indictment on your character. That is announcing to the world that you are a very, very devious individual. Because at the highest levels in the Vatican, there is some real dark shit going on. And we'll leave it at that. One woman recalled Savile sexually assaulting her when she was 16. Even decades later, she told the investigators that she remembered it vividly. After he was done, he turned to her and said, "You won't talk about this. Nobody will believe you. I'm Jimmy Savile, and I can get you." Oh, man. Could you imagine? That is not exactly what you want to have somebody tell you. But, you know, his behavior, this mania, disassociation with his victims, split personalities, this is something that psychologists call a dark triad of personality characteristics. And psychologist Oliver James wrote that Jimmy Savile was likely affected with psychopathy, Machiavellianism, and narcissism. And quote, Oliver went on to say, "Such people are often able to slide effortlessly between personas. Savile must have a fantastic inner life, grandiose wild, and desperate. He ran over 200 marathons for charity, right? So this is part of what you do. You create diversions. You create plausible deniability by putting charity work front and center in your career. Because where can someone go with that? They're not just insulting you. They're not just questioning your credibility. They're also saying to the world, if they come after you, I want to take this guy down. And if I take him down, by default, I'm also taking the charity that he's doing down too. So you're not just destroying him. You're destroying all the good stuff that is coming from his charity work. Now, mind you, the good stuff is only a cover. There's far more negativity, but this is the cover story that works so well for them. Because when you go to attack somebody like this, who is known for their charity work, you're knocking on a big door there. And there's a lot of people that would like to see you go away because you're ruining the charity component of it. I'm not talking about people defending Jimmy Savile. I'm talking about people defending the charity now are telling you, shut up. Stop talking about this. Look, he raised tens of millions of pounds for hospitals, leading some of these hospitals to give him literal keys to the rooms where his victims were. And his victims have said that they were raped in the hospital by him. Attacks, they weren't limited to hospitals, as we mentioned. They took place at schools as well. But, you know, we talk about these care homes. And there's a lot of, there were a lot of stories in the UK. Those of you listening in or around the UK know about Elm Guest House and Dolphin Square. This is children's homes where they were pimping out the kids to the rich and powerful. Lord Leon Britton, former Home Secretary, Margaret Thatcher. These are the people that were implicated in this. They were more than implicated. They were involved in running these care homes, you know, and being involved in the molestation of these children that are in care homes. God, it's bad to molest kids, obviously, just in and of itself. But when you go hunting for kids that are already having a hard time starting off life and wound up in a care home, you know, and you do so because you know that nobody cares about them and they'll never be, you know, no one is going to come looking. Nobody's going to believe them. They're damaged kids. So how can you trust their story? I mean, it is just the most reprehensible thing, but it's a common thread. That's why you see so many of these kids that wind up in state protective custody, wind up with horrible stories of things that have happened to them. They put in the foster care homes or the system itself, and terrible things happen. Well, in the UK, they have these care homes that are like foster homes. And Elm Guest House and Dolphin Square were two of them. And the people that were connected to these, you know, the powerful politicians that were connected to these care homes were the top, the most recognizable names and faces, the highest positions of power, the highest. Lord Leon Britton, former Home Secretary, Margaret Thatcher, former Prime Minister, Cyril Smith, former Minister of Parliament, Edward Heath, former Prime Minister, Lord McAlpine, Prince, Tony Blair, former Prime Minister, David Cameron, former Prime Minister, arrest warrant issued for sex crimes against children. Okay, I take back my earlier statement. I forgot that David Cameron was involved in this. I earlier said that there were a couple people I wasn't sure of. Robert Maxwell, father of Ghislaine Maxwell. He was involved in this. Cardinal Keith O'Brien, Prince Andrew, Paul Kidd, the Buckingham Palace butler, Sidney Cook, a serial killer, child molester, leader of the Dirty Dozen. Max Clifford, Queen's PR agent. Lord Justice Fulford, High Court judge, leader of the pedo support group PI. You know what PI is? Pedophile Information Exchange. It's like an out in the open NAMBLA. NAMBLA, National Association of Man Boy Love Alliance, I think, or Love Association, something like that. It's a pedophile group. Gordon Brown, former British Premier. Queen Elizabeth, found guilty of abducting 10 children, 7 boys and 3 girls in Canada back in 1964. Did you know that she was convicted of that? Bishop Peter Ball, busted with kids. Lance Corporal Mark Neal, Queen's Guard, Windsor Castle pedophile ring. Lance Corporal Simon Davies, Queen's Guard, Windsor Castle pedophile ring. These are the people that were involved in the care homes. But it's covered up. You know, it's covered up by, it's covered up through the legal system by pedophile judges like Lord Cullen. And so what would happen is that Saville would take boys from a boys' home on the island of Jersey, and he'd take them out on a boat where they would meet up with Ted Heath's boat, and the boys would be delivered to Ted Heath. Ted Heath would rape them, murder them himself, or have one of his associates do it for him, and then throw the bodies off the boat. Now, the reason why he did this was because he was the prime minister. He was so famous, everybody knew who he was. You literally couldn't let a witness live because they'd be like, who did this to you? And say, the prime minister. Now, whether or not someone would believe a kid, that's to be debated, but the kids would know who the person was. That's why they had to murder him. And so they did. Now, the Germans knew this, because the Germans were running this operation in conjunction with Jimmy Savile. So they would use this information against Ted Heath. Like when he was negotiating the terms of entering Britain into the EEC, which is the European Economic Community, which is the precursor to the EU. This is why the Great Britain's fishing rights are all fucked up, because it went from 72% down to 22% after joining the EEC. And everyone's going, why? Why'd we give up so much? Why'd we give up 50% of the fishing rights? Why? Well, because Ted Heath was in charge of the negotiations and he was being blackmailed by the Germans. This all comes from Michael Shrimpton, the former barrister. I mean, this is on him. He discovered this. And of course, they want him dead for it. Saville was involved in the Ninth Circle, which is so dark, I'm not even going to get into it. He was involved with the leaders of Sinn Féin, the IRA. He was involved in the production of snuff films. He was involved in the Dunblane pedophile ring, the North Wales pedophile ring. So, you know, everyone said, well, why didn't somebody say something about it? People did. People did say something about it. And you know what wound up happening to them? They disappeared. Hôte de la Garenne Children's Home in Jersey, where Saville was making child porn. The cops that were investigating that, guess what happened to them? They all just started dying from suicides. One died from jumping off a ferry. One who was a high-ranking judge that worked tirelessly against the pedophile network, drowned. You see what's happening? You understand this? This is what happens in the U.S. as well. The police let Jimmy Savile off on 7 different occasions. 7 different occasions. There's one of my favorite bands still to this day are the Smiths. I love them. Morrissey, Johnny Marr. You know, they were only a band for about 5 years, but they put out some really great albums. And you probably recognize some of them. One of their most famous songs is called Panic. Panic on the streets of London, Panic on the streets of Birmingham. You might recognize the chorus. I'll read a little bit of this, of the lyrics of this song. You tell me if anything jumps out at you. Burn down the disco, hang the blessed DJ, because the music that they constantly play, it says nothing to me about my life. Hang the blessed DJ, because the music they constantly play. Nothing terribly nefarious there. How about the next verse? On the Leeds side streets that you slip down, the provincial towns you jog around, hang the DJ, hang the DJ, hang the DJ. They're talking about Saville. That song that you've been humming for 30 years, Panic. The DJ that they're talking about hanging, well, it's that DJ from BBC, Jimmy Saville. Now, I'm sure Johnny Marr and Morrissey and the boys will deny that that's who the song was about for legal reasons. And I almost can't blame them for that. But they knew. Johnny Rotten knew. Go find that interview with him in 1977 where he's saying, I want to kill Jimmy Saville. I know all about him. He's a naughty boy. he's a hypocrite, right? The word was out and people knew, but nothing happened, because when you are the procurer of children for the rich and powerful and politically connected, sometimes the rules don't apply to you. Share this show with your friends and family. We certainly do appreciate it. Thank you for supporting this show, and I'll see you soon.